Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Peace Production, a podcast by the Organization for World Peace, where we look at the biggest issues currently facing human security. I'm your host, Matt Adamson. On this episode, we examine the growing independence movement in Canada's western provinces and what this is likely to mean for those living there. I'm joined by special guest and founder of the Organization for World Peace, Matthew Savoy. Matthew, hello and welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Cool. It's great to have you on, Matthew, and I just want to take this time at the beginning because I think it might be helpful for our listeners to ask you how the Organization for World Peace came about and what the journey has been like thus far.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess the way the OWP came into existence was just seeing that there was a need for a nonprofit organization that could specifically advocate against the use of military force as a form of conflict resolution. So I kind of believe that this starts with empowering the younger generation to provide new and innovative ideas that are currently flying under the radar for most of the people who are actually calling the shots. The OWP began with a passion for finding ways to address real-world complex issues using innovative approaches. Understanding the cost of war, the human and financial impact of war, shows us that war has to be the least effective strategy at conflict resolution. And oftentimes, as we can see in Iraq, has unintended consequences.
And where do you see the future of our organization going? I know it's made probably a bit speculative, but we've been around for 4 or 5 years now. What does the future hold?
Right, well, we're still continuing to grow rapidly, reaching different audiences, different groups. Even this podcast, I think, kind of shows the growth of the OWP itself. Next year, we're definitely branching into more of our charitable aspects, hoping to partner with more people, more organizations that are on the ground, dealing with people that, you know, the OWP would specifically have a relationship with that kind of like relates to our cause, specifically refugees, people impacted by conflict, even internally displaced people, people who are being displaced by like environmental issues. So in the next year, 2 years, OWP is going to be looking to form more partnerships with those types of people.
Great, great. Now on to the main topic of today, which is Western Canada. So following the re-election of Justin Trudeau earlier this year, we've seen a real surge in the independence movement in the Western states of Canada, particularly Alberta and Saskatchewan. And that's really appears to be around the conservative views of those areas not really being represented by the Liberal government in Ottawa. Matthew, what do you see as sort of the main drivers beyond that of this new independence movement? And is there any sort of historical backing to why this has come about right now?
Right. Well, I'll speak on behalf of somebody from Eastern Canada, right? Just trying to understand exactly what it is that Albertans and people from Saskatchewan are taking up issue with the federal government. I think obviously there's a clear lack of representation, right? The Liberal Party was shut out of Alberta and Saskatchewan, and yet they still won the federal election. I think when you combine that with, you know, sentiments that the rest of Canada is basically extracting wealth from Alberta, while Alberta's also having no say at the federal level in terms of policy creation. Think about like the carbon tax, which recently went into effect this year, which basically is trying to move our economy away from oil and fossil fuels, as well as other, you know, policies that have been enacted by the federal government, which make it harder to create to start energy infrastructure projects that are now going to be forced to consider future emissions as part of like the approval or rejection process. I think that just leads to growing frustration among those people living in those provinces. And then again, like I had mentioned, like with like if you also include the lack of representation and the fact that basically Alberta's been in basically a recession for the past 4 or 5 years, I think that's would definitely be the source of the growing frustration.
Yeah, and I understand that the Western provinces are particularly unhappy with the program of equalization payments. Could you tell us a little bit more about these?
Yeah, sure. So the equalization program is it's a federal program that provides transfer payments to lower income provinces. This is done basically to address fiscal disparity across the country and allow for comparable public services such as access to healthcare, infrastructure across Canada. So it's basically a program that's redirecting wealth from richer provinces to provinces that are having more difficulty in order to make sure that everybody across Canada has equitable access to funds.
These climate change measures that come out of Ottawa, the way they are received in the West, which is, you know, that's where Canada's oil fields are and that's where a lot of the energy production occurs. How has that impacted the economy out there? I know you mentioned they've been in a 5-year-long recession out there now, but has there been any moves to sort of reorient the economy out there? Is it still very much stuck in the primary production mode?
Yeah, so, well, Canada itself relies on oil production for revenue, right? And that mainly comes from Alberta. Since the oil crash, which was about 5 years ago, Alberta has struggled to recover from that. While there has been efforts to alleviate some of that suffering, it's pretty difficult because that economy itself is heavily reliant on oil and fuel. And the policies right now that we're seeing from the federal government are climate-friendly policies, right? Which are very popular across Canada as well. But of course, that's going to put more pressure on Alberta as they continue to try to rebound from the oil crash of 5 years ago.
Is what we're seeing in Alberta and Saskatchewan with this Wexit movement out here, has there been much of a response yet from the central government in Ottawa?
Yeah, so there has been like an effort from the federal government to try to send more people from the federal government to Alberta, Saskatchewan to try to understand better how to address the needs of those people. I know recently that the federal government back in June, but they approved the pipeline project, the main Keystone pipeline project that's supposed to be bringing oil through BC for export on the through the Pacific Ocean, right? So there's also been a long-standing problem with Canada's and more specifically Alberta's ability to actually access international markets to sell petroleum, and that's basically resulted in like a supply glut that's forced Albertans and Canada to sell oil at below market prices. So the pipeline itself is seen as a way to bring more revenue to Canada and Alberta, as we are actually able to attain like actual prices that the oil is actually worth in the international market.
But do you see this movement in the Western provinces? Will it continue gaining momentum? Do you think it has any chance of success?
So I don't think that that success for Wexit would be separating from Canada. I think that the complexities that would be involved in actually separating from Canada, I think would harm Alberta and Saskatchewan much more than it would benefit them. I think that this is more of a threat, really, to get Canada on board and to realize the plight of Albertans and, you know, as well as Saskatchewans, and try to at least raise more awareness around the issues that those provinces are facing.
Yeah, that's a good point around the whole awareness argument, because, you know, that these are conservative majority areas that in the Western areas, but that vote for the Conservative Party at the last election doesn't really represent a vote for the independence movement. So I guess you're right in the sense that, yes, raising awareness around this is necessary. But say this did happen, what do you think it would look like in practice, and what sort of implications would that have on the federal government?
Yeah, well, it would obviously create a very difficult situation because they would be surrounded by foreign countries. They would be landlocked, which they already are. But they would definitely lose like the support of trade negotiations, things that Canada is able to like negotiate multilateral agreements that are already broken with Canada. This will obviously create a very difficult situation for Alberta, as they would need to renegotiate their own treaties with Canada, with the United States, and with different countries around the world, really. That can't be seen as a victory to have to go through that process. I think really what the ultimate goal has to be is to find some way to rectify the current climate in Alberta, which has been very difficult. I mean, I think there's like a number of things that have kind of come forward in recent days, like For example, you know, maybe redirecting some of the funds from the carbon tax to Albertans, just to support their economy in times when the price of oil is coming down. Things like that that could actually benefit Albertans, right? And show that the federal government still is considering Alberta and is cognizant of the plight that Albertans are facing.
Yeah, yeah. And it's quite interesting that you say that in terms of the government addressing the plight of Albertans, because reading through the platform that Weeks at Alberta have published themselves, they are looking, they're very libertarian in their views for the economy. So they're looking at abolishing the federal income tax and GST. They're looking to reduce corporate taxes to 7% and set the personal income tax rate at 15 to 19%. So in terms of what effect that might have on those who are currently suffering at the moment, it appears that that social safety net would not be really increased. How would you see that playing out in terms of that sort of formula of economy, Matthew, in terms of being able to support those who are currently suffering? Would that sort of loose, very conservative outlook on minimal government and minimal intervention in the local economy work, given Alberta's resources? Or would that, right, would the removal of the safety net really be cause more problems than it would solve?
Right. So when I think about the issue for Alberta, I don't really see it as an issue of having the safety net or not having a safety net. I see it more in terms of, I guess, well, first of all, Alberta has, I believe, one of the highest incomes per person across Canada, even now, right? Mm. So it's not necessary that Albertans are poor. It's more so the fact that Albertans have a lot of potential in their economy that's not being realized because of the policies that the federal government is pursuing.
Yeah, that's a fair point, I think. And it's really quite interesting the way they want to go about separation if they were to achieve enough support for that. So they're very explicit that they would want a provincial referendum, I guess sort of similar to the way the Quebec referendum was held in 1995. What do you make of that approach? Do you think that's a wise approach in terms of the way to go about things, or would there be a sort of different approach that you would advocate for if a region wanted to become independent from Canada?
Well, yeah, of course, you know, we have the referendum, right? And I think that's basically the international standard for separation. But at the same time, I mean, I think that, the idea of separation still remains largely unpopular in Alberta and Saskatchewan, as well as Quebec. And maybe around certain times, especially when, you know, Alberta, Saskatchewan, or Quebec's economy starts to struggle, you might see a rise of some of this, like, nationalistic, separatist notions. Generally speaking, like, that's not really the will of the people. And if there was a referendum, I mean, it would be a long shot for Alberta and Saskatchewan to actually separate from Canada.
Coming back to the federal government now in Ottawa, in terms of how they'll respond to this moving forward, do you think Trudeau's government can successfully incorporate Western views in the way it goes about managing this situation? And what do you think they'd have to do to be able to do so?
Right, well, they're definitely going to have to, right? Because the sentiment's not just going to go away. And these are things, obviously, that the federal government's taking very seriously right now. Just because you don't want to have a divided country. So, you know, just in terms of some of the things that they could try, I mean, I'm not really sure. I know that they are trying, they have sent different public servants to Alberta, and they're trying to negotiate over different aspects of the emissions target policies within, like, the approval or rejection process for energy infrastructure projects. I know that the pipeline is going to be definitely a key victory for Albertans and Saskatchewan residents. And these types of things are definitely, I think, are going to help sway the public in the right direction. But really overall, I mean, these sentiments, they tend to be linked around times of financial hardship. And really the whole country is experiencing financial hardship right now. I mean, our insolvency rate in Canada is the highest year to date since the recession. So really, it's the whole country that's really feeling this brunt of slowing growth. And you'd expect that as the cycle changes and as Alberta once again starts to realize oil revenues and the price of oil picks up, some of these nationalistic and separatist ideas are going to start to fade.
Yeah, I think you're right in how this will play out long term, because the move at the moment, it doesn't make much sense economically to me. I think it's more of a cultural sign of frustration, if you will, that the West is not really getting as good as it gives in terms of its relationship with the rest of Canada. So it's going to be quite interesting to see how this plays out over the next year or so, and whether the whole taxation without representation idea really stays firm if Canada's economy does pick up again. I think moving forward that there is going to need to be a greater appreciation of what the Western provinces want from the central government in terms of the way in which they go about things. I mean, that may mean a sort of slowing of the approach to climate change and renewable energy to allow the Western states more time to readjust their economies, if that's going to be the way in which, well, the way in which Canada goes in terms of how they can, I guess, resolve this in the way that's amicable for everyone and in a way that isn't going to further alienate these Western people. So thank you very much for joining me today, Matthew. It's been great to have you on, and I hope to have you on again sometime. It's been great.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And a big thank you to our correspondents for providing valuable research and commentary on this tricky subject. For our Apple Podcast listeners, please leave a rating as it helps other listeners find us. And if you have any comments, good or bad, you can send us an email, admin@theowp.org. I'm Matt Edmondson, and until next time, goodbye.